And welcome to the program on this finally Friday. It is 106:23 right now in the afternoon. And this is Weather and Ag in Focus. I'm meteorologist Justin Storm with meteorologist Dean Wysocki and honorary meteorologist Bridget Riedel, also our ag director. Bridget, what's going on today? How you been?
I heard it was a football day today, so I dressed for the occasion. I'm all ready to go. Just going to stand here and cheer for the Bison as usual.
All right.
Yeah, animals with horns. Let's go.
Right.
Yeah,
do roar. It.
The furry cows.
The furry cows.
Oh, no, don't pet the fluffy cows. They'll run you right over. Bad situation.
Yes, it is football day. Why is today football day?
Because
someone needs to edumacate not a diehard football
season
person.
Starts next week.
So it's like, but why today is football?
Because it's a Friday.
Is there does college football start today? So there's a football game every Friday now until like February something?
Forever.
Yeah, basically. You get a 3-month break.
I think it just matters because the guy who wanted to buy lunch today likes football, so he made sure that we were all dressed appropriately.
Yes, that works as well. And me being a rush to get out of the house, I didn't bring any football stuff today. But that's all right.
Aw.
We got lots of fun stuff on the show coming up today as well. Bridget, apparently we have a guest on today.
We have two.
At 1:20.
We have a guest, yeah. And he's in studio with you today.
He is.
His name is Chris Sherman.
Mm-hmm. And Chris has been on the show before with us a few times, and it's always been a very interesting conversation when it comes to what Chris does. And he's with Tech Support Farm, and he's had some stuff going on recently we'll talk about. But you really don't think about tech and agriculture and cybersecurity going together. I guess when I'm thinking of cybersecurity, you're thinking of like some top business or some huge database or something like that. And well, I guess all of that is farming. So it's something
right.
You usually don't put together, at right. least think about. So it's interesting to have Chris come on with us and we get to just swarm him with a bunch of fun questions.
Well, and Chris has recently been attending some conferences, and let's just say that he gets up to speed in some areas that I hope he has to have like special classification for, because that's the areas I want to ask about, but I can't, so I won't. But I want to know, so you can call me later, Chris.
He might slip up. So yes, Chris Sherman will be joining us for our guest today. We also apparently get to talk about animal milk again, and that's the thirst of camel milk. Bridget, I don't know what you're doing to us today. First, we're talking about horse milk the other day, and now you want to talk about camel milk. You just can't get enough of it.
Yeah, it was horse milk ice cream that we talked about the other day. If you all were willing to be volunteers, I was going to sign you right on up.
Yeah.
But the camel milk, this is a little different. And Well, don't ask the shepherd.
You can milk anything with a teat, Greg.
That's yeah, right.
Can you milk me?
From that movie.
Such a funny movie.
So really, there's a camel dairy in Wyoming.
Yeah,
and I have
really?
Asked them several times if they'd be a guest on air, but they have not wanted to share that yet. Nonetheless, in Mongolia, they're running out of pasture. When you think about Mongolia, and they have this gigantic desert. You don't think about pasture, but apparently there's a little bit. And they're running out of pasture for the camels. So there's actually a government-funded program over there where you can bring your camels in for a year, be part of a government-run dairy operation. They will milk the camels. They will sell the camel milk. You'll receive the profits from it. And then after a year, you can take your camels back and you can set up your own herd, farm, dairy barn, whatever you want to call it, to go along with your camels. So it's a bit of a camel training program.
That's very
and
interesting.
Fun fact, they use the two hump camels. I don't know if it makes a difference.
One has water, one has milk.
Well, you'll get more out of two than one.
Right. That's exactly what I think the answer is there.
That quick thinking?
Quick thinking. Nice work, guys. Yes.
Yeah. So that, what else we got today? Minnesota Master Gardeners Program's open. So we'll touch on that a little bit as well. And I know that we've had a few Master Gardeners on the show before, but I'm sure we'll learn a little bit more about how you might be able to get into that program. And as a reminder, Farm Rescue will be taking volunteers. And I think they're almost always looking for additional help in any shape or form that you could give it, even if it's just a tiny, small little $5 donation. So we'll hit on those topics as well. We got a touch on the forecast today. It looks like there's some clouds rolling in. Man, there was some really, really thick smoke in here this morning, wasn't there? You couldn't even see across the street. The smoke was so thick, man.
Hey, genius, that was called fog.
I don't know. I heard some people in a parking lot saying it was smoke.
That's a true story. That's an actual true story.
You think if you can smell smoke when you can see down the road, but you can't smell it when you can't see across the street. You can't see your hand in front of your face. Man, that smoke was thick this morning.
Oh, man.
Do we have more smog in the forecast, Dean?
Well, we've got a few clouds. We'll call it partly cloudy for the rest of the afternoon. Temperatures should reach to the mid-80s with south-southeast winds on the light side. Tonight, we'll have partly cloudy skies, mid-60s, and partly cloudy for Saturday, a little breezier. Winds out of the south-southeast, 10 to 25. Upper 80s on Saturday. Hottest day of the weekend is going to be Sunday with highs in the low 90s. Dew points will be in the 70s. It is going to be a sticky one on Sunday. That is a sticky situation that a cold front approaches Sunday night. Kind of stalls over the area. We'll have a chance for storms after dark on Sunday. Some of those could be on the strong to severe side. And then temperatures fall off into the 80s on Monday. If you want some relief from the heat and humidity,
please.
Next weekend.
Thank God.
Next weekend for Labor Day weekend, we'll have temperatures in the 70s.
Woo-hoo.
Nice,
that's not bad.
Nice Canadian air mass will slide in for Labor Day weekend.
I think that's ideal. We're going to cut some of that humidity out, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But we'll probably see more smoke come in.
Well, do you think it's going to be as thick as this morning's?
I doubt it.
I still can't get over that conversation.
Did you eat lead? Did you eat lead paint as a kid?
I've been nibbling on my pencil this morning.
Okay.
Quick question. Uh-huh. As you guys were talking, this actually came to mind. Look at that. I was listening to what you were saying.
Wow. That's a first.
right. All right. So when you said that the humidity will drop over Labor Day, but that would that allow more smoke in? Can humidity literally like hold that smoke back? Because people talk about how thick the air is with humidity. Is that a possibility?
No.
Okay, fine.
But I like your thinking.
However, smoke can make fog thicker.
Well, it did today.
Or smoke. Yeah, smoke can make fog thicker. Actually, not in that way that you would think where smoke, like a reduction of visibility, but the particulates that are in smoke can actually condensate water onto them, and it can create more fog if those particulates were not in the air in the first place.
Now that is a cool thing.
You just blew her mind.
Boom.
No, wow. It's actually perfect. I like that.
Effect? Yep.
I don't think I do.
Whee! Well, that one.
That's close enough to an explosion. Where did that? Wait. No, where did that one even come from?
Well, it's like the little Geico commercial where the kid, the little pig's hanging out the back window of the car with the pinwheel spinning.
And he
says, whee!
Not
that one.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that makes complete sense. I didn't know you were doing the screaming frog.
Okay.
No, she's doing the Geico commercial. She was doing the But you know, you come up with something brilliant and then you just say something that just makes you scratch your head.
Don't let people know how capable you are of doing things, because then they'll never stop asking you to do it. But if you make them question every move and everything you say, well, they might not come to you for advice.
Hey, life coach Justin Storm, I wouldn't put that one on a t-shirt.
I don't know. It might make a pretty good t-shirt.
Hey, there's your side hustle. There's your disposable income.
Yeah, we need that.
After you start raising garlic, because yesterday we learned how we can make six figures raising garlic.
So actually, that was a really fun conversation from yesterday about I mean, I didn't really know what it took to grow garlic, and apparently you can make a decent little side hustle even if you don't have a large garden to grow garlic in. Just sell it on Facebook Marketplace.
Do you think the boss would allow us to just like chew up the backyard here, plant garlic in it, and then we'll give him like a 5% cut of the profits?
Sometimes it's best to ask for forgiveness, gentlemen.
You are absolutely correct.
I got a rototiller if you want
to. I got a buddy that's got a bobcat and he can come over here. We can.
Well, he's got a tiller on the back of his tractor. He'll just cut the whole thing.
Perfect.
In literally 7 minutes, probably.
Right. So, you know what? We'll do it.
Perfect.
We'll do it this weekend while he's not here.
Everybody's gone.
He'll come back next weekend. It's cooler.
That's Labor Day weekend.
That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, cooler.
The boss will be out of town.
Yeah, he'll be at the lake.
He'll come back on Monday. The whole back area is all rototilled. Oh, yeah. I can't wait to see the look on his face. We don't know who did it.
I don't know. He's giving me a weird look right now.
Shh. All right. Speaking of weird looks, I'm pretty sure our guest is giving y'all one. But
yeah.
Today. Yeah,
he is. He left. Are you kidding?
He dipped out.
He walked out.
So our guest today is Chris Sherman, as we said, and Chris is with Tech Farm or Tech Support Farm, and we want to talk about ag events, ag cybersecurity events that he's been to. The whole reason he and I decided to come on air today was I saw a press release for an FBI conference that was recently held in Omaha about what's going on for cybersecurity for farms, food processors, et cetera, and I wanted to know more, and Chris, of course, is my resource. So when we come back, we have a whole list of things to talk about with Chris, because we have to remember that ag security is part of our national security. It's actually a much bigger focus than many people might think. So we're going to talk through that. I'm going to ask Chris all the questions that I want to ask off air so I get all the details, because he's not supposed to share them. But that's okay. Those are my favorite types of conversations. So we'll be right back with Chris Sherman. Looking forward to hearing what he has to say. So if you are listening, pay attention. This will be good. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for joining us. Happy to have you here. And a big thank you to Here We Grow sponsors, Pivot Bio. Pivot Bio is part of our all season long production of our corn. And we are doing this as a project to raise money for the Farm Rescue Organization. Justin mentioned earlier, they need volunteers. And one of the things they need is for those of you who have a CDL, they'd love to see you helping move equipment around. So using that option, you could certainly volunteer for Farm Rescue. And again, Pivot Bio helps us to provide more profits so we can support that organization. Fultz Buildings is a part of that group as well. That's been on our Here We Grow field. And if you are looking at building a shop, a house, or a combination thereof, lake cabins and more, they'll be a part of bringing your dreams to reality. Chris Sherman is our guest today with Tech Support Farm. Chris, I'm sorry, I can never get all those words in the right order. I'm
not
looking forward to writing them down in big letters across my page today. But we wanted to talk about a conference you've recently been to. So please do share what was all going on and what you got from that.
So I attended the FBI conference that was put on by the Nebraska field office. And we talked about the threats to ag in general. And ironically, I come at it from a perspective of cybersecurity, and it was incredible the stuff that we learned about all the different types of threats that are happening inside of agriculture right now. I mean, everything from foreign espionage and the theft of secrets and all of that sort of thing, to even what's happening inside of organizations and farms with employees and how they're stealing information, they're stealing product. It's incredible.
Wow. And not slowing down. So when you go to a conference like that, who's all involved? You are there as an attendee. I kind of wanted to go just to hang out and hear what was being said, but share a little bit about how many different agencies might feel comfortable being in a situation like this.
So, I guess since 9/11, they actually have a lot of different agencies that work together, but then we also see a lot of collaboration between the federal and the private sector. And so the FBI was there, NSITE was there, and then we had what are called fusion centers. And fusion centers are a combination of federal law enforcement agencies and then private sector security firms. There was another group called InfraGuard that was represented there as well. The USDA Farm Bureau was there, and several other farm agencies were there as well.
Go ahead, Dean.
Well, no, Chris, I was just going to say, how big of a threat is cybersecurity when it comes to ag community? And are the majority of our farmers taking things seriously?
So the way I would answer that is it's a large threat, but at the same time, you know, we have to start thinking about it from not only just a cybersecurity perspective, but from, you know, a physical infrastructure perspective as well. A case that had, you know, that happened, we had Chinese foreign nationals that were working in the United States. They were completely legal, and they were smuggling product back to China in order to reverse engineer it. And it took the FBI, I think it was like 4 or 5 years before they were able to nail all of it down and able to track what they were doing and what they were after. And you know, it was everything from physical product to the actual you know, flash drives with all the information and all the documentation and how to grow and the genetic properties of the different, you know, products that they had confiscated.
Well, and when you say physical product, we mean like physical plants.
Correct.
Plants have been
seeds,
taken.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And then analyzed for other use, because those are items that are in development.
Correct.
For use.
Yep.
And at that point, they are still considered protected property. Yes. And intellectual property.
And ironically, these were even, you know, in this particular case study, these were even people that were working for a federal agency inside of agriculture. And I mean that, and when we talk about, you know, how seriously is everybody taking this, unfortunately, we need to take it significantly more seriously, because it is, you know, permeated the top layers of our society.
So one of the notes that you have on our sheet today says biosurveillance.
Yep.
Can you tell me what you mean by that?
So biosurveillance would be the idea of monitoring how the production of the production, like the genetic development of a product, and then reverse engineering it and watching how that development works, is basically the spying on another country and what they're doing and trying to steal that information from them.
Chris, why is that information beneficial, or what's the significance of it, of to why somebody would want to come and, I don't know, take seeds and genetics from here and back to another country?
So the idea would be that if you think about, you know, the amount of time and money and effort that is being put into the development of different seeds or different traits, and then if you don't have the technology that other country has, it makes it very valuable to steal it or, you know, walk away with it so that you can kind of catch up and you know, it removes a lot of the work and a lot of the effort from that.
I see. And I guess it could take away from someone's position in a global market, say Roundup Ready sugar beets, if we can just blast the weeds without killing the sugar beets, another country has to put a lot more time and effort to match those yields when they can't
correct
spray a crop. But if they just take the genetics to that, now suddenly they've caught up to our capabilities.
Absolutely. It gives them a competitive advantage, an unfair competitive advantage.
Okay.
No, because they don't have the cost of development in order to bring that type of product to market and fruition.
Okay. Yep.
And Chris, what about foreign companies or foreign lands buying some of our ag farmland? Is that a worrisome? Is that a threat?
So it is a threat, but, you know, ironically, that's one of the ones that seems to be a lot more recognized, right? And mm-hmm. So people are a lot more, you know, aware of it, kind of like that Grand Forks, you know, facility issue that mm-hmm. happened last year. But at the same time, you know, it's when you have foreign, you know, individuals that are purchasing land and investing in land, and then they have ties back to, you know, a hostile foreign state. Those are the ones that we're really concerned about. And I mean, it's not as prevalent, but the problem is that then you start seeing where, you know, people coming on tours, or they're, you know, they're in the United States for some reason, and they're actually going up to farms and they're getting tours of these facilities. They're measuring, they're taking pictures, they're, you know, they're asking, you know, very in-depth questions about the equipment, and they're trying to recreate and they're trying to take that information and put it, you know, elsewhere.
Now, this might sound like a stupid question, but aren't there background checks when, like you said, individuals that might have ties to hostile countries, isn't there a background check before they can purchase any land?
No, not to my knowledge, not in that regard.
Should there be?
Not in a, well, they're private sales. It's no Correct. Different than if you choose that you want to sell your house to somebody, you can choose that. If you want the background check done, or your realtor does, then that's on you to do it. It's a private sale. And understand that it's not that all of these countries own millions of acres. Actually, the country that owns the most, as far as a foreign land ownership, is Canada.
Correct.
Canada. And China is much further down the list, but that still is a problem that exists. And before the foreign lands purchases, because, I mean, I get it, they're there, you're not going to regulate private sales. Because if you do that, think about all of the infringement on the economy and on someone's capitalistic, you know, abilities within this country. The one I worry about way more is that person coming over here, and just what Chris was saying, they're on the farm, they're making the measurements, they're looking at the equipment, and they didn't clean their shoes. Because foot and mouth disease within cattle and sheep will come in on someone's shoes far before it comes in on an imported cow.
Yeah.
I can guarantee it.
But at the same time, the other major problem that we have is that our society is highly altruistic, and we have no issues with sharing information, and we have specifically in agriculture, we have a tendency of trusting people, and we really need to, you know, we need to shore that up. Because it is too easy for us to have a delegation, you know, of individuals coming to our facility, and they ask such bold questions, and they just start, you know, they start making, you know, notes and measurements and pictures and recreating diagrams and getting, you know, GPS, you know, imaging, and all of that is used to take it back to their country and you know, catch up. And while that doesn't seem like it's such a bad idea, at the same time, you know, that is our competitive advantage.
Well, if you're fighting on a global market, you don't want to give up percentages of your market, because then it just comes back and hits us with where we're at. I mean, if you look at corn and bean prices, and I mean, everything's in the garbage, but maybe that's part to do with it.
But you also think about, you know, the way that other countries gain their technology. And I mean, look at our trade war with China. You know, they're the whole premise of that is that it's theft of technological property.
Very interesting, Chris. Yep. Well, we got a bunch more to talk about, and if you have any questions you want to ask those, feel free to do so. 701-293-9000. That's the Red Wing Shoe line. Emails of the program, whether it were ag@flagfamily.com, comment boxes on Facebook, YouTube Live. You can also find us there over on Acres TV. We're going to get caught up with local news here when we return. Lots more to talk about with Ag and Security on Weather and Ag in Focus. And welcome back to the program on this Friday. It is 1:35 right now, and rejoining our conversation here with Chris Sherman from Tech Support Farm. If you got any questions, 701-293-9000. That's the number to the program here. And, you know, we're talking about security and agriculture, and ag security is national security. And you really think about it, 2% of the population is feeding about 98% of the population. So there's a lot of what would you say, low density to high value stuff going on there, Chris? And could you tell me a little bit how ag security is national security, and if ag is to metaphorically blink, everybody's going to blink?
You know, going back to what you said about the 2% of the population feeds 90% of the world, or 98% of the world, it's that idea that, you know, it is a very low density industry, but it has such a high impact. And so therefore it makes it very low hanging fruit. But at the same time, it also is so dependent on technology and equipment and all of the inputs that go into it for us to be, you know, optimized. And so when we think about ag as a national security threat, if agriculture pauses or if it has a disruption of any kind, the entire society is going to feel it. Whether it's our economy, whether it's, you know, our faith in the infrastructure and our faith in, you know, just our general societal norms, it would have a devastating impact.
I see. And how about when it comes to the context of a more contested world of globalization and fragmentation?
So when they were, so I can't remember exactly which agency had done this, and they kind of talked about five different aspects of the contested world that we live in. And as globalization has kind of taken over, you know, we look at the issues of interdependence on supply chains and how that makes us incredibly vulnerable. We look at something like fertilizer chemicals or any of the other inputs that come in, and oftentimes those are not within our shores, right? They're not domestic, and so we are highly dependent on other countries and other supply chains in order to get those.
I see.
Oh, tremendously so. There's a lot of stuff that we import, and what could possibly come in with that import?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's,
or even if there was a disruption inside of that, you know, in that supply chain.
Yeah. And part of that disruption happens in the fact that we have one of the two largest blue water navies in the world, and we're not always out there patrolling every travel lane on the
Correct.
Ocean. And if we're not, piracy can affect our supply chain
yep.
tremendously when they take over our cargo ship, and we don't even realize it.
I mean, even global unrest in other, you know, in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
You know,
Chris, we've got a question for you that a listener sent. How cybersecurity and ag could affect how, or do you have information on how cybersecurity and ag could affect equipment or systems and what that could happen? And I'm not sure if that's related to like systems and tractors, because if you think about what happened in Ukraine where they were able to shut down stolen equipment, if it's along those lines, but feel free to take the liberty of answering how you'd like.
So when we think about vulnerabilities, when we actually think about physical threats that have actually happened, you know, unfortunately, we try not to discuss that simply because we don't want our adversaries to know what has been compromised and what was a successful attack in that regard. But when we discuss vulnerabilities, obviously, almost all of the equipment that we use these days has some sort of controlling software that is managed by the manufacturer. And if the manufacturer does not have the security and the proper security posture in place, then it leaves that software vulnerable. A great case in point is that Microsoft outage that we saw, you know, a month ago, right? It's not that that was an attack, but it's the idea mm-hmm. that we don't recognize the high interdependence that we have. And so if there's a particular software that runs a particular piece of equipment and somehow a foreign actor has gotten into it and they either take it hostage or they manipulate things or the outputs of it, it can have a highly devastating impact on you know, a particular farm or an entire sector of the industry.
See.
Let's go back. We
got a caller here. Go ahead then.
Oh, okay. Go. Take the caller first, but then I want to go back to the solar storms over Mother's Day because I think I have a question that maybe Chris can answer for that.
Sure. Yeah. David, welcome to the show. What's going on today? What's your question?
Oh, yeah. Afternoon. Yeah, I was, I've been noticing on YouTube there are a number of videos about massive floods over in China, and whether we're considering them friends or enemy, the floods have been so extensive, they're going to have a hard time dealing with food crops this year. And if you've got any comments on that. And the other, and you know, you've been talking about software and computers and whatnot in dealing with potential problems. But one that's kind of more logical and more stupid is the politicians that refuse to acknowledge climate change. You know, if we've had invasive species in America, the armadillo crossing the Mexican border 50 years ago, now it's getting up into Kansas, and they still refuse to acknowledge that climate change is happening, could you consider politicians that refuse to plan ahead like that saboteurs?
David, is any of this related to cybersecurity at all, or is it just political climate change talk?
Well, if you want to talk cybersecurity, it's, you know, the idea of putting additional costs on the farmer. That farmers are dealing with the real world, and the cyber world is an artificial world, and there are additional costs that come to that. And farmers are not necessarily trained or prepared to plan ahead for that, and so they're left in the lurch when it comes to the additional costs of that.
All right. Well, appreciate the question, Dave. I'm going to let you go because you got a really buzzy connection with you, but thanks for listening and calling with the question.
I guess I would respond to that by saying that I think he has a tremendous point on the politics side, mm-hmm. right? That unfortunately we tend to be highly reactionary in this, you know, especially in politics. And so we don't respond to something unless it becomes a crisis. And I see that happening in this arena for sure. Okay. And we need to do a better job.
But I agree with you there. But I will say that when our caller mentioned that farmers are left out in the cold with technology, not knowing what's going on with it, I think that's very untrue.
Yeah,
farmers are very, very high tech.
Yes,
and
they are.
Precision agriculture, yeah. Especially in this region, we're one of the highest adopters, and
yes.
That's not going to slow down. Chris, I think you can speak to the fact that you work with farms that are operating at a tremendously huge level of cybersecurity because they have to. This is no longer a mom and pop business. Would that be fair?
I would say that it might be more fair to characterize it as we work with farms that have a high technology adoption rate. And so they are the first ones to jump into a new piece of technology. We have customers or prospects or farms that we work with who are utilized as training grounds for different major manufacturers, right? They have relationships with them. They test equipment, that sort of thing. Unfortunately, I think that there is a significant amount of misinformation and miseducation in regards to security and the liabilities and the vulnerabilities. And I think that that's where the federal government has started to awaken to that. And then at the same time, you know, Tech Support Farm is at the bottom of the food chain and trying to spread awareness in that regard as well.
I'm going to bring you from the federal government level down to the local level, right where you're working.
Perfect.
It is not always about what's happening on a global and a federal basis.
Yep.
What about when it's just simply employee sabotage because you trusted someone on your farm with your records?
And this is what's fascinating to me because I have not ever thought about that. And that was something that really stood out to me in this conference is the idea that the people that are physically on your property, the ones that you trust, the ones that you're working with, they might have ulterior motives. Right. And the case studies that were presented were obviously for large manufacturers or large, you know, ag inputs. But really, when we think about, you know, the people that we're utilizing on our farms, you know, they come from all walks of life and they have, you know, any number of different, you know, reasons and motives behind them. And we need to be meticulous in what we're doing and how we're managing it. And that means everything from, you know, separating your networks and putting up your firewalls and making sure that, you know, proper access, you know, whether it's, you know, to computers or equipment or to software that manages your farm, we need to be highly, you know, vigilant of those gateways and make sure that they're properly locked and the only, you know, the correct people have access to them.
That's what's most important on a local basis.
Yeah.
Is who do you have in your tractor? Who do you
yes.
have doing your book work? Because they can
yes.
absolutely lock you out of all your
I mean, think about the idea that if you contemplate the amount of information that is on a farm computer, and we're not even talking about your private data, we're talking about manuals to your equipment, troubleshooting manuals, that sort of thing that you paid great money for, right? All it takes is a USB flash drive, and your guy could walk off with it, and he could be selling it. And that's just a mild domestic threat. But if you think about it from the perspective of another country trying to re-engineer something, they can do the same thing.
Wow. Bridget, did you want to touch on that solar question before our call?
Oh, yes. Thanks. I didn't write that note down like I had written other ones. Okay. If you go back to the weekend, Mother's Day weekend, it was during planting season in May. We had a solar flare storm that disrupted a lot of planters that were actually in the field.
Okay.
Chris, is that something that you can help to prevent in the future with the business that you operate to keep those planters running? Because my understanding is for some of them, you've got to have at least two satellites that you can make connections with to do your GPS, to run your AB lines, et cetera. How can farmers protect themselves on the farm against something like that?
Unfortunately, I would say that, you know, solar flares and those kinds of things are unfortunately a threat that, you know, impacts everybody. And there really is no way to get around that. The way I would look at it is we talk about disaster and recovery, and then we talk about during that time frame when you do have an outage, what is your backup plans, right? If you've lost all your computer equipment, how do you go back to manual operation? What is your plan B, so to speak? And that is something that we help, you know, farms with. We do, you know, analyze and we do kind of evaluate where their weaknesses are, and we discuss, you know, methods of keeping the operation up and running in the event of a disaster, whether it's a fire, a flood. Mm-hmm. Solar storms was not something that I'd ever thought of. But, I mean, it's a very real issue, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Put that on your bingo card.
Yeah.
Well, especially since the sun is in one of the most active cycles we've seen in quite some time now. So
absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Chris, from this conference, I know we've been touching on this, but what were some of the major takeaways from this conference? Maybe a couple things we haven't had a chance to get to yet.
You know, going back to the five areas of the contested world, they were talking about globalization. They talked about fragmentation, disequilibrium, and contestation. And the concept of the contested world that we live in, and we're fighting over resources, we're fighting over technology, whether it's, you know, new technology, that emerging, you know, technology, or if it's water or ground, any of these resources and inputs into agriculture have now become something of a flashpoint that we need to be highly protective of and vigilant. And it struck me very fascinating that those are things that you would never have really thought about, that you need to protect and actively work to, you know, stay on top of. I was really struck by that.
Right.
The concept of there's a group of people that just show up at the edge of your field and they start digging up your plants. Where on earth would that have ever come from? But apparently, you know, and that's a major issue. You know, and people posing as inspectors or people, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of threats out there. And when we think about that, we need to really be tightening the access to our facilities and our farms, and we need to be more cognizant of who is coming and going and why they're doing it. And when your FBI office is telling you that you need to be, you know, quote unquote, friends with your local agent, and you need to be reporting things that are suspicious and out of character and out of the norm, it is a major issue, and they're seeing a lot of activity that, you know, that may be happening right under our noses, and we don't even see it.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. I mean, there's a lot of things in there. You just, like you said, little simple things, and you just don't think about. Chris, we've hit on a lot of different topics here. Tell me a little bit about Tech Support Farm, what you can do in terms of helping small-scale, larger-scale operations, just the general person when it comes to cybersecurity and agriculture.
So our mission is to provide cybersecurity for agriculture, but the way that we go about that is we go through education, and then we also provide the support for the infrastructure that your systems live on. So that's network security, that's building networks, point-to-point bridging, computer repair, basically keeping your operation up and running. Because we can't just slap, you know, software on there and tell you you're secure and tell you that you need to change your passwords, right? Mm-hmm. We need to be, you know, exactly. We want to have a relationship with those farms and making sure that things are working and operating for them, you know, efficiently. Because this is, you know, this is even bigger than cybersecurity. This is making sure that your operation is running smoothly 24/7 as well. So
I see. And if somebody wants to go and find more information about what Tech Support Farm does, maybe what they might be able to do to help, or just get in contact with you, where would you direct them to go to get that type of information?
Yeah, if you go to techsupport.farm, you can fill out a quick questionnaire and give us your name and how you'd like us to contact you. We can definitely reach out. The other one is, obviously, you can call or text us at 701-446-8518. We are located right here in West Fargo. We serve clients all the way up to, like, the Pembina and you know, Cavalier area, and all the way down to the South Dakota. You know, we dip into South Dakota a little bit right now, and we are out west and out east, and so we put a lot of miles on. But yeah, that's, you know, it is all about the relationships that we build, and we do our, you know, we do our due diligence, and we have after hour service, especially during planting and you know, harvest and those critical times. So we are here to keep you guys up and running and make sure that your farms are safe and secure and help you better understand how to keep your operation locked down.
That's great. And what was that website one more time?
TechSupport.farm.
TechSupport.farm. Well, yep. Chris Sherman, Tech Support Farm, thanks very much for coming in today, talking to us a little bit about the conference and cybersecurity when it comes to agriculture as well. Appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, not a problem. Well, we got to take a quick moment here when we come back, another check on the forecast, and maybe we'll talk about camel milk again. Who knows? Yeah.
Okay. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus, 1:57 in the afternoon. We'll do a quick run over the forecast here, and I think that's going to be about it. And then let everybody go out and enjoy that weekend. We're looking at partly cloudy skies out there right now. Temperatures in the lower 80s. We'll make it up into the mid 80s. Some spots will reach the upper 80s this afternoon under partly cloudy skies and light winds out of the south-southeast. Clear skies to partly cloudy skies tonight, mid 60s. And the weekend looks breezy. Hot and humid. The worst day, if you want to call it that, is going to be Sunday in terms of heat and humidity. Saturday, upper 80s with south-southeast winds 10 to 25. Sunday, though, we'll have lower 90s, dew points in the 70s. That's air you can wear. Humid on Sunday. And gross. We're going to see a cold front coming through here Sunday night. That is going to trigger off some storms. Some of those could be on the strong to severe side, so make sure you have it locked in here. WDAY, and we'll keep you updated on any severe weather. So for Justin,
Bridget, you want to add something quick?
Yes, I do, is Chris Sherman's going to join us at Big Iron, the Wednesday of Big Iron, noon to 1 at the Morton Building. He's going to be part of our social media meetup with the Tillage Tuesday guys, so come see Chris in person.
Awesome. Right on, we're out of here, bye.